Welcome to the Button Mashers of the Empire podcast, your source for all that is Star Wars The Old Republic related.
I'm going to regret this. You watch your language.
Thanks for coming to another episode of Button Mashers of the Empire podcast. As always, my name's Ray. With us is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
Not too bad.
Awesome. And of course, we also have our new permanent member to the podcast, Nikki. How's it going?
Hello. I'm doing fine.
Cool. Well, got a lot of stuff to cover today. A lot of good stuff, upbeat stuff. The water cooler's got some new
upbeat
stuff.
Upbeat stuff.
Like happy, cool, good
stuff.
We
don't have anything that's sad and melancholy today.
Exactly. We try to stay away from melancholy and sad. It's still wintertime, kind of, in some places, so we're going to keep it upbeat. when we hit the water cooler, we're going to be talking about some more stuff about Warcraft, which is there's some really cool stuff coming up with the new expansion. We're also going to hit on MechWarrior Online. It should be coming out sometime this year. And we're also going to go over the contest that we started last podcast. So let's go ahead and start off the podcast with my section here. Today I'm going to go ahead and go over leveling. We enjoy the game. You know, everybody that's been playing the game that I've talked to or read some comments on my blog as well as some other blogs, the game is going over really well. The only problem is, in some areas, it just drags when it comes to doing quests other than your class quest. So, here are some things you can do to make it a little bit more fun, and to kind of get past your nits, especially if like you're leveling an alt. We all have a planet that we don't like. You know, it's like that with every game. You have a zone, or a planet, or a continent, or whatever. You'd rather go to work for 12-hour shift than go through this planet. So,
oh my God. Really?
Oh yeah. I can think of a couple zones in Warcraft, and I can think of a planet in Star Wars.
I cannot think of any place where I would rather work a 12-hour shift than play a game.
So, now you've got your standard missions. You know, this is just a standard thing in the game. You get a goal. Go off and kill these guys, go off and collect this, go blow this up, do whatever, come back, get your credits, get your gear, whatever. Now, if you're kind of tired of that, or you get in an area where you just don't like to do that, keep in mind, once you hit level 10, you can always jump into a war zone. Now, don't be afraid, because I know we've talked about this before. Even if you're level 10, you're going to get thrown in with the group from level 10 to level 49. But you do get that big buff, so you're going to have equivalent stats to a level 49. So you're not going to be one-shotted. You have a very fair chance of doing some decent damage and getting things accomplished. At the same time, make sure, even if you're in a losing team, and I mean you're losing bad, like it's going to be 6-0, and they're going to, in Hutball, and the game's only been going for, 2 minutes. Stay in it. Don't leave the war zone. Because at the end of the war zone, you will get credits. You will get experience points. Now, you'll also get valor levels as well as war zone commendations, which you can actually pick up some nice gear with the war zone commendations that will be good, because you don't need to worry about PvE versus PvP gear when you're just leveling. It's not that big a deal. So you could pick up some pieces to kind of fill out your gear a little bit. But, it's really quick, really easy experience and credits hitting a war zone. And you'll be able to level past the planet real quick and then make it so you can just go back to the planet and just do the class quest. Another thing is, once you get your ship, remember, you have space battles and space missions you can do. Those also give you a lot of good experience, as well as money and the fleet tokens or fleet commendations, which again, you can turn those in for the more fun gear, the orange stuff that make yourself look like a pilot of some sort, or some boxes with some gear in it. There's also some upgrades you can pick up for your ship, because your ship, you can upgrade the different systems in your ships. So that's another really good way that if you end up with an area that you just don't really like, you know, if you've got your ship, go for your space battles. They're quick, they're easy, and even if you don't have a specific quest for it or specific mission for that space mission, you can still do it because you you'll get experience at the end. Plus, for every single thing you blow up, you get experience. You can watch it tick off. You know, you blow up a ship, you get 4 experience. You know, it just it really stacks up and adds up real quick. Another thing you can do is, remember, you have flashpoints. Flashpoints, you don't necessarily have to be on the planet to pick up the quest. Usually the quest on the planet is to get you to the area for the flashpoint. You can just be at the fleet, go up to the area where the flashpoints are, and pick up the quests right there, and you know, look, stand around in the fleet, look for a group to get into to do a flashpoint. You'll pick up some nice gear, you'll pick up some excellent experience points. You'll also pick up social points, which is a good thing to have as you go. Plus, you know, it's just going to be a really nice experience, because by doing your flashpoints, you're also kind of training yourself and preparing yourself for operations when you hit 50, because you're going to be used to working in a group more, and it's going to give you a little bit more of an edge compared to somebody who really didn't do any at all and doesn't have any experience.
If you didn't start playing Star Wars with friends or family, this is a good way to meet some people, to form friendship bonds that you can play in operations later with.
Exactly, you know. So you know that's a really good way to, like I said, if you end up with an area that you just don't like, don't be afraid to use these other aspects of the game to level yourself up. Because it's really easy. They just give you so many different ways to get through the game, not just to get through to level cap, but to get through different storylines. They give you all these different things. Take advantage of it. I mean, yes, you have storylines for your class quests on the different planets, but you know, there are some really good storylines with the flashpoints. So, you know, there are so many different aspects to the game that you can take advantage of to work your way up to level cap that, you know, there's really no reason for somebody to sit there at, say, level 30 and not want to go to this planet and just go, you know, forget it. It's frustrating, forget it. Just go do something else. There's 3 other areas you can level up through. So next time you're leveling up an alt, or you're playing your main right now and you just really don't like that planet, you know, take your pick. You got 3 other different directions you can go to level past that. And then once you get past it and get some more gear, you can even go back and do those quests, you know, to get the easy credits or whatnot. And, you know, you're going to be higher level and better geared, so it's not going to be nearly as difficult.
And we can get into this a little bit more with Grace from the future, but BioWare is going to be making it easier for you to get larger chunks of XP out of all of these war zones, space missions, and flashpoints.
Cool. Yeah, so, you know, just don't be afraid. You know, just try them. All right, so next, Nikki, what are you going over today?
Well, I was looking into the more social stuff that you can find in the game, because like with Warcraft, you could play it by yourself pretty much up until you wanted to raid, then you'd have to group up with other people. But the whole game, like all the quests and whatnot, you could do by yourself. But Star Wars is a little different, not better or worse, just different, that there's a lot of things that you can get extra just from grouping up with people, and you don't even have to be doing group quests. It's just grouping up and doing normal quests, you'll get social points or special things. And I found a YouTube video released from BioWare where they talk about, for the novice, for the newer, like if Star Wars is your first MMO you've ever played and you've never really grouped up and you don't really understand what all this stuff is flashing up on your screen, you don't know how to talk in general chat, and you're not sure how to enter war zones, it really goes through and explains all that. And you know, I'll post a link on Button Masher's website so that you can watch it, but it was a really, really good video to explain to somebody who's just starting out in MMOs.
Cool.
I have been, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, Gamers Fridge, But I've been posting on my the Gamers Fridge's Facebook page and Twitter and Google Plus to tell me your Star Wars related or the Old Republic related website or blog, because I'd like to compile a list to post it on Button Masher. So it's kind of like a one-stop shop for class questions, and say you have a bounty hunter or you have a Sith warrior and you're like, I want to go marauder spec. Is a Sith warrior a marauder?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't
have
one. That's
what Bob is.
Okay, I don't have one, so I wasn't sure. I didn't want to confuse them and be like, Marauders Republic. But I'd like to have a list of and a brief, you know, description of what these blogs do and what they cover, and it just be a nice directory of them. So if you have a Star Wars The Old Republic related blog, send it to Button Mashers, or you can contact me on Twitter. It's at the @ Gamers Fridge.
Awesome. It's a good idea because, like you said, it's going to be kind of like a one-stop shop. You can come to the Button Masher site and get some of the information that we supply, and then if we don't cover it, or maybe you're looking for a class we haven't covered yet, or even just one aspect of a class we have covered that we haven't covered that specific aspect, it would be nice to just be able to go through this list and, you know, find those answers.
Especially if you're looking for something more than just stats and rate or operation information. You know, if you're looking for a class quest or help with something, or how to be a bounty hunter and do this quest, I think different blogs would be really good for that. As I know, SithWarrior.com is like the elitist jerks of WoW. SithWarrior.com is the elitist jerks of Star Wars. They've got all the theory crafting and the math and the graphs for endgame characters, and it's a really, really well done, really informative website, but it doesn't really talk about other things other than operations and, you know, theory crafting and math. Lots of math. Do not be afraid.
I fear math.
Yeah.
Fear not the big numbers.
I love Warcraft, and I played Warcraft for 6 years before going over to Star Wars, and I never in all those years of raiding, I never understood elitist jerks with their equations, and I was just like, I do not get this at all. And they do for my benefit dumb down Sith warriors a little bit for people like me who do not understand how X could equal into haste, but it's a really good website. So if you're doing end game stuff, you should check it out, or start your own blog and then email me the website so I can post it on buttonmashers.com or buttonmashers.blogspot.com.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. So send them out to us, guys. We'll compile a list and toss it on our on the side for our links and supply the world with more information. That's what we're here for. All right, so Mike, we got some more greetings from the future from you today.
We do.
Fantastic.
We've talked a little bit over the past couple of posts to the podcast about patch 1.2 and patch 1.3. Currently, patch 1.2 is on the public test server. I've been playing around a little bit with that. I know this is probably a little inappropriate for Button Mashers the Empire, but I've been working on a Jedi counselor, kind of seeing what that
means. Oh, you're out, mister. You are out.
Oh, I got it. Okay, I'll see you guys. But the first thing that you can play around with, regardless of what level you are at, is the new UI customizations. So what this does is it allows you to basically move, customize, resize, adjust kind of transparencies of all of the different elements of the UI. So it's something that you can jump right into. I know a lot of times when a new patch hits that, there's this great new flashpoint for max level characters, and there's this new operation for max level characters, and if you're really into PvP and you're really at end game, you can go do a new PvP section. Well, this is something that's immediately accessible to everybody. I think that there's a lot of good features of this new UI customization. Like I said, you can basically move, change transparency, resize, readapt everything that you can see in the UI currently.
Oh, fantastic.
So if you want to have the toolbar over on your right side be in two or three columns with three or four buttons, knock yourself out. If you want a border around it, great. If you want to do this, that, the other thing, fantastic. So I think that has a lot of benefits to it. What I've found that I don't really care for right away is that there's no coordinate system telling you where some kind of anchor point for these elements are. So if you're a perfectionist that wants this set of buttons to line up with this set of buttons, you're kind of out of luck. So if you're a perfectionist, or let's call it rear-endedly retentive, for the PG podcast here, that's going to be a little frustrating. The other thing that I personally found frustrating, and I don't know if anyone else, either of you guys uses this, is that currently on my UI, I have two action bars shown. One's the normal one that has all of the numeric key assignments. And then I have the second bar underneath that I have abilities that I don't use constantly in my rotation, but that I use infrequently and situationally. So like when I'm playing my Bounty Hunter, my Death from Above is on that toolbar because I don't hit it every combat every time. It's, you know, when I've got three or four guys clustered together, I can do that. The new UI customization eliminates the ability to just click one button and the UI bottom kind of reconfigures for that second bar. I don't know if you guys have used that or not. I'll take that I'll take the chirp of silence as no.
I set up with
the way that you rolled a Jedi. I just can't wrap my brain around that.
they had cookies on sale that day and, you know,
Suckered into
okay.
it.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, I run with both my bars going, because I actually use just about everything on my top bar, and I actually use a couple of things on my bottom bar. But again, you know, I also have most of my bottom bar is stuff that it's just for only certain circumstances I would use these. But yeah, I definitely use both bars. So yeah.
So that's going to be I wish that they had that kind of dual bottom bar configuration as one of the defaults that you could say, okay, this is the template that I kind of want to work with, and I can customize off of this, as opposed to the single bar is the default template, and you've got to kind of reconfigure off of that. That's a little unfortunate to me.
Yeah.
The other things that you can get into right of way is the item matching. So for those that don't want their characters to look like a hobo as they're leveling, introduce the ability to match your gear to your chest piece. So again, with the counselor that I'm playing on the PTS, this has it gives your character a unified look. So particularly if you're a role player, you can kind of get a little bit more immersion so that you have a put together look. It's something small, but this is a character that you're going to be looking at for, you know, hours at least on end, if not a significantly longer period of time. So it's nice to kind of have that kind of holistic look going on. The last major component of this update that you can get access to pretty readily is the legacy system. And they've talked a little bit about two things. The family tree. And this is going to be really a benefit to role players and people that kind of envision a tree or relationships between their characters in some way, shape, or form. So that they've included options for your characters being married, parent-child relationships, their siblings, their allies, their rivals, and all of that can be done within the legacy family tree system. The other thing that's a little bit more nuts and bolts of the legacy system is the unlockables. And these are going to be unlockable through some combination of either character advancement in terms of level your legacy level or just raw cash. And be prepared to spend some coin on these things. That what I was looking at on the PTS, that some of these are going to cost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of credits to get to, which is a little unfortunate for those that are a little cash strapped. So some of them will unlock just as a function of finishing certain character milestones. So when you finish chapter two on a particular class, that will unlock that class's emote and their buff for the rest of your legacy. Your chapter three completion will unlock the heroic ability for that class. So, for example, for the Sith Sorcerer, you can use now have your legacy use Force Lightning. But there's a couple of ipso provisos, quid pro quos to go along with this. All of these heroic abilities are on 10-minute cooldowns.
Okay.
And they're also only usable with an ability called Heroic Moment. So Heroic Moment itself is on a 20-minute cooldown, separate from the ability. And it's only usable when you have a companion out. So you cannot use these heroic abilities in operations or in war zones. So which leads a little bit to the balance issue of, I don't want to be in a war zone and all of a sudden I've got an Imperial agent force choking me.
Yeah.
Well, when are you supposed to use them?
Just you can use them
standing around in the fleet.
You could, you know, if you're dueling somebody, you could certainly use them. If you're out and about in the regular world, if you're in flashpoints and you don't have a full group, that's kind of they're more intended to be cool things that your character can do and not be responsible for breaking class balance, is my understanding. We want you to feel enabled by these items, but not overpower any one class or any one combination of things so that we have to completely rebalance war zones again.
Good, because I was actually concerned about that, because, you know, with giving other classes other, you know, same abilities as a different class, it could have really upset a lot of things. I was really concerned as to, you know, exactly how they were going to implement that, but by putting it on where you have to use your heroic moment, and which is on a cooldown, and then this other ability is also on a big cooldown, it really does wrangle it in. So I think it's gonna really implement nicely, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool thing, but not an overpowering thing. So if you're working on a class quest, and we know a lot of the class quests towards the end are certain junctures on a planet that you end up fighting some sort of heroic person, creature, beast, robot thing, and maybe if I could force choke him, that'd be kind of handy. Those sorts of moments where it's just you in the spotlight, you and your companion, you know, against the forces of evil or the forces of good, depending on which side you're playing on. Take advantage of that, and the effort that you've put into your legacy so far is that what they're trying to reward you with.
Cool.
Also, they've shown, BioWare in the PTS has shown what some of the features you'll be seeing in patch 1.3. For the legacy features. So we talked a little bit earlier on about other ways to level instead of standard questing on a planet. In particular, some of the unlocks that you'll see in patch 1.3 are accelerating experience gains from flashpoints, war zones, and space missions. So that I think that's usually a range of one or two bonus steps within these particular categories. And I don't know whether it's going to be a 5% gain or a 10% gain, but if you really love PvP, you know, put the picture your legacy and your cash into activating these particular items, and you can kind of continue that snowball effect into your favored playstyle. There'll also be items where you can accelerate your affection gain for your companions. So if you really like to explore their story, this will give you a chance to kind of push that process along a little bit faster and get to new conversations and new quests with your companions. You also have items that will increase your crafting crit. So if you really want to get into the crafting scene, which that's something we haven't covered talking about the future, but there's going to be a lot of rework of the crafting system in patch 1.2, trying to make it more desirable for crafters to craft endgame level items. And in particular, your crit crafting will come into play in this feature. Lastly, they've also talked about items and included that in the items that are visible in Legacy for 1.3, that they'll increase the travel speed. So you'll either be able to get your first land vehicle at level 10, or it'll increase the cooldown on your quick travel time, or things like that. You decrease the time of your emergency fleet pass, things like that.
Nice.
What's crit crafting?
Meaning that when... So crit crafting is when you are crafting an item and you have a critical success, so that a lot of items will have an augment slot open up. So these are items that are currently only available through, I believe, scavenging. It very rarely pops up in scavenging that there's an augment that comes in as a result of sending a companion out for a scavenging mission. So these augments are going to be something that you can get a little bit easier starting in patch 1.2. And the legacy features that are coming in 1.3 will allow you to increase the chance of a critical crafting success.
I've never even heard of them. I mean, my my bounty hunter is a biochemist.
Yep.
I've never seen a crit crafting.
I don't know how it works for biochem. I have seen it happen with a couple of my characters. I have my bounty hunter is a cyber tech, and every once in a rare while, it's probably maybe one out of every 50, one out of every 75-ish, somewhere in that neck of the woods. Mako, who has an increased crit chance, will come back, and when you finish crafting that item, it will say that, you know, Mako's had a critical success in crafting, you know, this armor plate, or this, not so much the armor plate, but more like an earpiece, or you were an armor tech that you had crafted a chest piece, and it would have, in addition to any slots that that particular item had, it will also have an additional slot called augment. And like I said, I don't know how that works for biochem, whether you just get an additional item or something that has a slightly bigger set of stats for the stim.
Interesting.
Nice to see that there's so much being... that BioWare is doing so much in the game to kind of plan for the future. All right, let's move into the water cooler. Now, before we really start in the water cooler... Last podcast, we started up a contest. It ran for 2 weeks. It just ended Friday. This was... we asked everybody who listens to submit their most epic death screenshot. It has to be in-game, in Star Wars. It can be either you watched the death happen, or you were actually the person that got killed. And it had to be epic in some way. Whether you round up a whole area and killed everything, except for one guy who ended up nailing you, or... you fell off a massive cliff, whatever. It had to be epic in some way. Well, we have a winner. Unfortunately, the winner we picked did not submit any information other than just their email address. So I'm going to go ahead and post the picture up on the blog site as well as the podcast site. if you submitted the screenshot, please send us your information so we can put a name to this picture, and we can and also give us your mailing address so we can ship this your prize off to you. The screenshot was pretty cool. I will give you a lot of credit on that. Low-level character taking on a higher-level elite. There's a dead body in the middle of the screen. I mean, I'll post, like I said, I'll post this on the site. You guys will think this is a good one. Blaster bolts flying through the screen. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's the character was on Tython. There happens to be a sequence of quests, and this is one of the last guys that you fight is that in that series of quests. So I think must have been a little bit of a surprise fighting that guy. And it looks like he almost had him, but
he fought well and died better,
so to speak.
Unfortunately, having somebody all close to killing him doesn't count. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
That's what I hear tell.
All right, so moving on. New game coming out this year. Unfortunately, we don't have a hard date. We just know it's, quote, sometime in 2012. We've got MechWarrior Online. Now, if you've played any of the MechWarrior games, I know I have in the past. I haven't played anything recent. But they're really nice games. Now, I've always played them on platform. Unfortunately, this game is going to be exclusive for PC, at least at the moment. No Mac, no platforms. It's only on PC. Now, it is going to be free to play, and it does support DirectX 9, 10, and 11. So, if you haven't upgraded to any of the higher DirectX versions, you know, if you still got 9, you'll be fine. The game starts off in in-game year of 3049. So, again, it's MechWarrior, so it's going to take place definitely way off in the future. They've done some really neat things as far as giving a little customization. You will be able to customize your mech's payload, decals, paint job, make it a little bit more personalized. Unfortunately, it won't do you too much good because the game is going to be primarily first-person perspective. So you're not going to really get to see too much of your own vehicle. It's more or less showing off to everybody else. Now, they're talking about trying to implement a lot of third-person perspective so you can kind of see your own game, you know, your own mech, as well as everything else going on. But as of right now, it's primarily first-person. You will not be able to get out of your mech at all. So you're pretty much in that bot from the moment you start the game to the moment you decide you don't want to play anymore. Which, you know, it's not bad. You know, there's been games where you can jump out of your mech, and I always thought it was kind of pointless, because once you jump out, you are so, compared to the mech, you're so fragile and so easily able to be killed in any situation. I never found the appeal of getting out of a mech.
Walking around with 100-ton robots and you want to get out?
Yeah. Surprisingly, a lot of people want to get out. There's been a lot of games I've played where you can actually get out of your mech, and it's no good. Your mech can withstand a missile blast. You cannot. The game is being published by Infinite Game Publishing. One thing that's really good, that they're really working hard on, is the playability of the game. And I don't just mean like the graphics are smooth and you can see around stuff. I mean the actual physical playability. They're working with several different companies to make the game playable on just about any kind of controller or joystick or flight system that there is on the market. So if you want to play it with a keyboard, you can. If you want to play it with a 360 controller, you can. If you want to break out your flight simulator controls, do it. You can still play this game very efficiently.
But if you want to play it with a Mac, you are SOL.
pretty much. But they're giving you a wide range of ways to play this game, which is cool, because if you really want to throw yourself into this game and really want to give that serious feel of a MechWarrior game, a flight control setup is really a great way to play the game.
I know a lot of people that are serious about their MechWarrior went out and got full-on throttle and stick setups.
Exactly. I've actually played previous ones and had that kind of a setup where I had, now it wasn't the top of the line, it was kind of like the bottom of the line setup, but it was still that same kind of control figuration, and it really did enhance the game, I thought. So if you like that, then perfect. It's going to be set up just like that for you. If you'd rather just use a joystick or even just a regular controller, you're set. So they're not just looking at the digital gameplay ability. They're looking at the physical gameplay ability. And I think that's kudos to them, because most games, they don't really give it too much thought, because they just think, you know, keyboard, mouse, maybe a, you know, an extra keypad on the side, and you're fine. But they're actually making sure that any single way you want to play this game, you can play it. It's not a problem. It's completely configurable. Next thing for the water cooler, Mists of Pandaria. Now, one thing I want to kind of go over is, now the beta invites went out a while ago, and there was more or less a revolt that ensued.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if you guys follow any Warcraft blogs. I still do. Oh my gosh. They were up, like, torches and pitchforks. They were so mad that, you know, they're going to invite a million people to the beta. Guys, Blizzard cannot give all million people a beta pack in the same day. You'll get it. Untwist your panties. Sit back down. You'll get it.
Yeah.
Now, Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Please continue.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I know that they, the people with the popular blogs, like MMO Champion and, you know, the WoW Insider people and, like, Maticus and them people got invites in the first wave, because they're the ones who people go to get that information. You know, they're popular enough. They have a good enough following. And Blizzard wants Mists of Pandaria information, good information, out there by reliable sources. So they were part of the first 100,000. And the rest of them were people who had active accounts for the entire reign of Warcraft. Like, I think 6 or 7 years. If you had one of the first accounts and it was still active, you were one of the 100,000. They got a beta invite. They really played to the loyalty this time around. And if you bought the package deal that they had, you will get it. You're just not going to be first.
And it's understandable that everybody's excited that they want to get on the beta. You know, they've earned themselves in one way or another a beta invite. So it's understandable everybody's excited, but you know, you guys just gotta remember that the servers are only just so big, and they just can't invite everybody. It has to go through a list, and if you bought the game, you did that year thing, and you got your beta invite, you know, your guaranteed beta invite, you're gonna get in. So just remember, you're gonna get in. Now, as far as the expansion, they're doing a lot of good stuff. I mean, they've gotten the new zone artwork that I've seen looks amazing. I mean, it really does look really good. I think they've done a great job with that Asian kind of feel. And it's not just the buildings, but the environment itself looks really nice. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at any of the flood of screenshots that have come out since the Non-Disclosure Act was lifted.
The Who's a Monkeys look creepy, and I want to hit them with a stick.
The pandas are going to get new totems, which the totems look cool. I mean, let's be honest.
They're definitely panda cute.
These totems look pretty awesome. I still think dwarves should have gotten kegs for their totems back then, but that's a whole other topic.
Well, I think the dwarves did get kegs. They just haven't shared them with anyone else.
Yeah. There are no empty kegs to make in the totems in the dwarf community.
But the panda totems, I think they look really good. Now, they've released some new Tier 14 gear images. The paladin gear, I think, looks really good. I think it they kind of brought back some flair from kind of a vanilla WoW flair, I think. Like the paladin gear looks a huge amount better than it has for a while.
Looks like Paladin Ho. It looks like the Thundercat logo on his shoulders.
It does. It does, actually. Now, the Warlock Tier 14 has been released, and okay, I'm not a fan of that, but you know, you can't make everybody happy all the time, and I get that. Well, I'm not a big fan of
life is perspective, because I think the Warlock stuff looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan, but again, it beats the past druid stuff I used to wear, so I guess it's not that bad.
It's hard to... they're casters, and casters wear robes, and it's really hard to look menacing in a skirt.
True.
I mean, Buffy could pull it off. You cannot. I can't look scary in a skirt.
You know, I think what else might be kind of screwing things up with this particular picture for the Warlock gear is it's a full-sized human, and most Warlocks that I've seen are little gnomes running around. So if you picture that at like 3/4 scale, I think it's a lot more scary.
You know, you're right. I think that would put it in a different perspective. I think it would look better on a gnome. Because you're right. You know, you're 100% right. The Warlocks I see running around back when I was playing were either gnomes or undead. That was pretty much what your Warlocks were.
So this is a fully and well-fed human Warlock that you just don't see. You know, it's either the 3/4 size gnome or the you know, skeletal undead Warlock. So I think it's a good start, you know.
Agreed. You're right. You know, it isn't bad, but again, it's not for me. But then, you know, I'm not playing a Warlock, so I'm good.
What do the druids, like I always, my main in Warcraft was a resto druid. I'm curious as to what the druid gear is going to look like. I'm scared. It's going to have like bamboo sticks shooting out of it somewhere, I'm sure.
Flowers growing.
Yeah.
If it goes typical druid stuff. Now, I will give them a lot of credit in the gear that came out with the Colosseum. You know, the Trial of the Crusader and all that stuff. The druid gear that came out with that, I thought was awesome. I thought it was amazing. Except for the bird head helmet. I thought every aspect of that one was fantastic. It didn't have trees on it. It didn't have branches. There were no leaves. It was armor. And I thought it looked great. But, you know, this coming from a perspective of I was a druid tank, so...
You were a bear. And... Nobody saw your gear anyway. Quit complaining.
Hey, I had to look at my gear still. now Warlocks are going to get new pets, and I think this is cool. Like, you've got the typical Voidwalker-looking minion, but it looks like they took the Voidwalker and just buffed him up. Like, gave him a Chuck Norris shot or something, because... He's well armored. He's significantly larger. It looks far more menacing, and I like it. I think it looks great. It's about time the Voidwalker got an upgrade. What?
I believe Chuck Norris is a hunter. Chuck Norris doesn't level. He just flexes and absorbs levels from those around him.
Oh man, what did I get into by mentioning Chuck Norris?
You know, it's like being back in General Chat.
Ain't that the truth? Looks like as far as the Warlock pets go, looks like there's a fire ethereal. No, not ethereal. Infernal. Not ethereal. Excuse me. Infernal. It looks like they brought back... Now, there was a... I can't remember what it was called, but... It was a demon you could get with a Warlock quest. You had to do a specific quest in order to be able to summon this demon. And when you summoned it in a group, you know, somebody got sacrificed and a big chunk of their health got taken away or they got killed. Well, instead of doing that Warlock quest, it looks like you actually get that now as a normal Warlock pet.
I want to say it was called a Doomwalker. Is that right?
I think you're right. You also get there's a new Felguard. I think it's a Felguard. Anyways, you get a new guy, a new one, plus now you get what they call the Observer. It's one of those giant floating heads with the multiple eyes and the tentacles hanging down. It's called an Observer, and what was it that was the pet? Willy
yeah.
Was the little baby version of it. So you get one of those. Now, you also get a Mistress, which during Burning Crusade, if you've been out in Outlands, the really, really tall women with the six arms, two big, huge swords, fiery hat, that's what you get. Now, the shots I've seen...
In the thong.
Yeah. Now, the shots I've seen are all compared to a gnome, and these all tower over a gnome.
Yes. Yeah. I do notice in most of these pictures you can see a gnome warlock.
And it just goes, yeah, like you said, it just goes back to the warlocks are gnomes. But
I digress. I'm sorry.
Yeah, these are all these just absolutely tower over. So even if you were to play a humanoid, like a human or a night elf, I mean, granted, I know a gnome is humanoid, but I mean like a taller human. it's still going to be considerably larger than you, which I think is really cool. Because you're calling forth this, you know, demon from the netherworld, it should look big and badass. It should be significantly bigger. It shouldn't be like your little tiny imp. I thought an imp was great for a starter, but I thought they needed to get a lot bigger as you went. And they really didn't.
I wonder what kind of buffs they come with. I remember the imp used to have a health buff. I never played a warlock. I don't remember what the other ones were. But I wonder if each of them come with a different, like a hit rating buff or something like that.
Yeah, that I don't know. I didn't see any information about that, but I'm still looking that kind of stuff up. But it does say that they're going to replace your pet, the normal warlock pets. Now, I don't know if they mean like they're clarifying that you can't have this and your normal one out, or if this is actually going to completely take the place of the old ones. But that's the gist of what I'm kind of understanding from just reading kind of what they're saying, is that these are actually going to take the place of the old ones. Like, you're not going to be able to have the old ones anymore. You're just going to have these. But again, I could be wrong, because I haven't actually seen any concrete verbiage saying that you get these and these, or it's these instead of these. But I think they're really good, really nice upgrades to the
something old different. Ones.
Yeah,
I'm sure people who've played warlocks for 6 or 7 years are like, oh, "What? I guess I'll take the imp out." But it'll be fun for them to play something a little different.
Agreed. All right, you guys got anything else you guys want to cover here in the water cooler?
I think that I'm all set.
Nikki, anything?
I'm good.
All right. Well. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Button Mashers podcast. As always, you can find our blog at buttonmashersoftheempire.blogspot.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at blogbmote. Nikki, where can they find you?
You can go to my website, thegamersfridge.com, for all gaming recipes when you're for your next all-night gaming or party. Or you can follow me on Twitter at gamersfridge.
Again, you know, check out the site. We'll have the contest winner's picture put up on the site, so you guys can check it out. And if you were the one that submitted it, please get back to us so we can get you out your prize, man. All right. Well, it's been fun. I'll catch you guys later.
See you later.
Have a good one.